Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Hello, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I am honored to welcome psychologist Sana Carpalotti to the show. I asked her how to pronounce her last name. She showed me how to do it, and I instantly just blanked out, and I apologize for that. So Sana is an authority in transformational processing, which is the journey from hurt to healing. She works with folks in all walks of life and helps others reclaim their lives after adversity by helping them understand and overcome inherited and current life trauma. So in this episode of Your Partner in Success Radio, Sana will share several really important things. One is the secret to achieving well-being. Another one, obstacles that prevent us from success in business and in life, and we all hit them. I don't know about y'all, I hit them multiple times a day. And effective strategies for managing how you manage your stress. So good morning, Sana. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. And tell our audience how to pronounce your last name, because I suspect I butchered it, and I do apologize.
Good morning, Denise. You were actually pretty close.
Sana
Carpalotti.
Carpalotti. I have the same thing with my last name, Griffiths. Nobody can spell it properly. There's no H, there's no N, there's two T's, two F's, and an S, and I'm not Mrs. Carpalotti. Thank you very much. So we're kind of
I have to admit, I also did a double take, and I have a lot of nerve.
And I'm telling you, I'm convinced that my former in-laws made it up. I've never met any others, so we just took care of our last names. But anyway, welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm so excited to have you here. Our mutual friend, Adam Homey, good friend of both of ours, highly recommended that you be a guest, and then we had our pre-call, and I just thoroughly enjoyed your company. So let's get started. You've got an awful lot to share.
Thank you. I am thrilled to be here, and I enjoyed our conversation a couple of months ago, and you put me at ease with your style, and you have an equally soothing voice.
Oh, thank you. It used to be people, you've got the sexiest voice, and then it became soothing, and I'm going, what the hell happened?
Okay. Well, I didn't want to say sexy, but it could be, yes.
Okay, I feel better now. Okay, we're done. We can now close off and go about our day. But no,
I hear the same.
I bet you do. So we've got a lot of we've got a lot of territory to cover here because, look, we all have traumas. We all have problems. I don't know about you. I stub my toe multiple times a day. Being a solopreneur, you have no idea. I will sometimes stand in the middle of my living room and just talk to my ceiling fan and ask my ceiling fan, what just happened? What was that? But, being a solopreneur or an entrepreneur or small business owners, nothing is easy. Nothing is easy, but we do develop cast iron stomachs and an attitude of, you know what, I've got this. So let's talk about what people can do to just pull their head out of their misery and get going. And I'm going to apologize to the audience one more time. You probably will hear you can hear him. One of my feline office assistants, his hashtag on Facebook is Hamilton is an ass. And he does not have an indoor voice. So chances are you're going to be hearing him a lot, and there's not much I can do about it. So sorry.
Well, it's music to my ears.
He is quite a character. Okay, so let me stop talking and let you take over because I do not want to cut into all of the great information you've got to share. So, but before I go, before I mute myself, Is there anything you want the audience to know about yourself before we get started that will put a little, you know, maybe a box around what you're talking about?
Well, I want to tell you and your audience this. You can heal anything. And if at this point you don't feel as if you have the strength to take a look at whatever is that white elephant in the room, is that you can build the strength to do it. And you're talking to somebody who experienced complex traumas over a period of a couple of decades, and they are all behind me now, and we'll talk about that, you know, in the next hour, because I think there's a lot of confusion and illusion about what the healing process is. But the good thing is that the science tells us today is that how we live within ourselves, our the actions we take, the beliefs we have, the lifestyle that we create, this impacts the state of our well-being. All of this shapes our lives. So the quality of our consciousness, which is within us and to a large degree within our control, increases flow or tension in the neuropathways because, see, our cells are talking to each other. Every cell is talking, and we can enter into that conversation to create the change that we want in our lives. So we all have experiences in our lives that are good and those that are difficult and even, you know, highly traumatic. And a lot of, and they're just as fleeting as well-being can be. So a lot of it is determined by what do we do, how do we hold it, what do we give our permission, do we give ourselves permission to do what is known that can be helpful to us to allow us to achieve what it is that we want to achieve. So we can read, you know, lots of different stories about people who have survived against all odds, whether it's cancer or a business idea or, you know, some sort of adversity. And yet, it's almost like it's distant and it's out there and it doesn't, we don't absorb the information in a way that allows us to take the action in our own lives. And so personally and professionally, my experience tells me that we can cope and manage and also heal with the right support, our building of our internal resources and knowledge of how to build traits of well-being, because we become so focused on our stress, our pain, our suffering, our life story, that the sense of well-being is not as deeply rooted within us, and it becomes kind of just as fleeting as the everyday stub your toe kind of stress that we experience. So our focus, the brain actually has what is called or referred to as a negative bias. And that has been, you know, hardwired into our system by our ancestors from many, many, many millenniums ago, where, you know, there was a lot of concern about survival. So
fight or flight.
Fight or flight, and right. So it's also something that we can begin again to enter into that conversation in terms of what's happening internally with how we think, our perceptions, the images that we have, and the sensations that we carry in the body, because Candace Pert and my mentor Jean Achterberg, they both have said that the subconscious mind is expressed through the body. So if that's indeed true, okay, then we owe it to ourselves to take a look at, well, what are the driving forces within the subconscious mind? You know, because we are in that space and we live out of that subconscious experience, that level of consciousness between 85-90% of the day, some people estimate even higher.
Oh my goodness. You know, my grandmother shared something with me when I was quite young that I didn't understand at the time. But later on I said, there was a great deal of wisdom in what she said. But basically what she was saying, that when you see somebody and they're in repose and they're not really paying attention to being on or being all that present, mm-hmm. and if you look at their face and you see the misery in their face and they don't even know they're showing it, or the bitter anger, the lifetime of bitter anger,
mm-hmm.
it does show. It should, especially the older you get. You can see people that are truly wicked if you're paying attention to them, and you can see people who are truly just highly evolved people, but it
mm-hmm.
does show up in your face, I believe. And I remember looking at her going, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it shows
but
up
it's,
across the board.
How you feel, how you walk, how you move, how you sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get
how you speak, the language choices that you make, how your life moves, how you interact with life. Okay, whether it's a stubbed toe or a car accident. My clients, when they come here because they're stressed, and I use that term very loosely. Because when I look at stress, I look at, okay, well, what are the symptoms that you're having? Okay, what's the pattern? When did it start? And then sometimes I look behind them at what is the family pattern? Okay, because oftentimes our early lives and the lives of our ancestors is not considered in as a causal factor in what we're experiencing today. And it's clearly shown in the literature in the ACE study that was done, adverse childhood experiences, that was done about, I think, 15 years ago, maybe longer, that things that happen to us in childhood, if we have markers of abuse or alcoholism, or both parents are absent, or there's recurrent humiliation or even divorce, that those things impact us. We can appear as if life is good, but then at some point during adulthood, we can be triggered in lots of different ways, or when that unresolved stress, again, in the subconscious that is expressed in the body, okay, when those unresolved conflicts are like a volcano that we hold, an erupting volcano that we hold within ourselves, they manifest in disease. And they found through this study, heart disease, liver and lung issues, autoimmune, smoking addictions, alcohol issues. So it's easy for us to avoid these experiences that we had. And unfortunately, there's a lot of support in the therapeutic community as well. Because about 5 years ago, when I started to gather information on my clients as they come in, I found that 88% of them had been to therapy, and some of them for several years, on what they brought here for me. Now, I'm certainly not the it or end all, but I look at things very differently when I step back and I take a look at what happened on your timeline, what happened in the ancestors, because I believe very firmly and very certainly that if you have the problem, Denise, you also have the solution, and that's what I facilitate in the work. And I'm a very astute observer, and I have my brain, for some reason, has this ability to follow the path, and I can take to help facilitate the transformation.
Isn't that a quality of empathy, though?
And lots of training.
No, well, yeah. That goes without saying.
And also,
I'm listening to you and thinking that empathy has a great deal to do with how you read, you know, these paths, if you will. And I'm glad you brought up the illness thing, because I actually just wrote a note about that too. It has been my long observation through life that so much of what ails people really was kind of self-taught, so to speak. I mean, I'm thinking of one friend in particular, and everything that happens to her, I'm telling you right now, she brought it on herself. Everything.
Well,
and I have to be very frank, I've run out of sympathy for her.
Right. And while that can be true, it's not a blame thing. The way I look at it is if we ground ourselves in our lives and just stand still for a minute and notice what we're experiencing and turn around, even if it's a tiny little step at a time, and see what happened behind us. What are we carrying? Because so much becomes patterned, not only in our nervous system, okay, but in how we think. We are heavily conditioned and programmed even before we're conceived. Okay, now think about it. Okay, before I had my children, I used to dream about what it would be like to be a mother and how my children will be and, you know, the partner that would father my children. Well, so what happens then when things don't go as planned? Okay, do I have enough resources to allow not only the situation, but to allow my child to be who he or she is? Okay, or does it become about me? Okay, so we're all born into this pre-existing family lineage where there's this consciousness or this emotional climate that I often refer to it as. And in that climate, there's this vulnerable, very influential kind of atmosphere, okay? And back there is the good, the bad, the beautiful, and the horrific. And all of that resides in the family system. And so there can be a binding or a blinding tension of love within the family, because you might notice when you go to certain family member's house, or even to somebody else's home, it doesn't have to be family, but there's a set way, there's a tension, or there's a flow, and anything in between. Okay, well, there's a family dynamic there, where there's maybe unquestionable obedience, or maybe there's a secret that the family's keeping that nobody talks about, or there's all-out war. And those are all ways that we belong within the family system. So getting back to what you said about your friend, you know, pain and suffering are very different, okay? An example is, pain is about is acute distress. There's some tissue damage, a result of an accident, an illness, pain, or, you know, surgery, and we need to get help for it, or we need to take some action. Okay, now suffering is different. There's no real response to treatment most of the time. There's sort of a an enduring quality about it because emotions come into play, and most people don't realize the hidden benefits or the reasons why they suffer. A really good example is I had a client some time ago who had a narcissistic mother. Okay, and this woman was ill most of her life, and as we looked at this pattern, it was pretty intense. So I looked at her and I said, can you ever get sick enough to get what you want from your mother? And she was like,
ouch.
I know. It's like, no, I don't think I can. And that was a huge turning point for her to begin to step back and take a look at the investment that she had made, that how she sacrificed her life, her health, for the love of her mom. Now, as a child, okay, that happens a lot. I mean, how many of us have had stomach aches because we don't want to go to school? We might want to just stay home, and we don't have any other symptom other than the stomach ache. Well, I mean, we know that anxiety and all of that is kind of resides in that stomach area. We get butterflies, we get, you know, different digestive ills. So suffering or creating a symptom can be a solution for an unmet need. It gives us a little bit of feeling of control, but there's not always an understanding of what is that about. So sometimes...
So, Sana, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I have a thought, and I wanted to get it out before it's completely gone. It's one of those days. When you're saying
I may do that too.
Oh, gosh. It's just been seriously one of those days. Half my clients are in the path of Hurricane Florence. There's a lot going on, so my brain is a little bit scattered. And I'm trying very, very hard to not be scattered, which leads me to my next question, which is because I'm doing exactly that. I've got, a few little knots in my stomach. I'm concerned about a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? Do you have any kind of case studies or tips or advice when you recognize, first of all, maybe we need to learn to recognize what's going on with us physically as a result of what we're thinking either out loud or internally or subconscious even. So I guess it's a two-part question. How do you identify it in the moment? And what do you do in the moment? What do you stop? Do you meditate? I go outside and ground myself. I kick off my shoes and
stand in
the grass under, stand in the grass under my pecan trees in all weather. So what would you tell people to say, okay, I'm now recognizing that I don't want to go to school. I don't want to have that phone call. I don't want to go grocery shopping, whatever it is. Big, little, small, I don't want to go to chemotherapy, whatever it is. So once they identify that, what can they do to kind of alleviate that stress and move their mind and thoughts in a different direction that is beneficial?
Okay. That's a really, really good, powerful question. And over the years in my work, I realized, because my clients kept asking me and telling me, I don't know what to do. So, and honestly, I'll just sidetrack just for a second here. I remember when I was 29 years old, my dad had just died suddenly. My mom had died when I was a child. And I was also serving in the capacity of a birth coach with this young girl who was a pregnant teenager. She was at the mental health center where I worked, and she had nobody. And I asked the director if I could support her. And we went in, and I have to say, she went through the entire birth without any medications, using hypnotherapy and visualization and breath work. Anyway, I was my dad had just died. And about 2 months later, this baby was born. So there was this balance there of death and of birth. And it was like, I need to hold both of these together because they exist in the human condition. And I remember standing there And about a week later, after I'd kind of come down, and I was kind of crying a little bit and feeling like a lot of anxiety. And it was in that moment that I said, I need to find ways to manage myself, because nobody teaches us how to use our breath, how to use our minds, how to clear negativity in the brain, how to live within our bodies, or how to manage like even pain or distress that we may be feeling in the system. And it was at that point that I started my search. And so I am all about the tools. I'm all about helping, because there's the healing piece, and then there's also the cultivation of well-being and having ways to manage, like just what you're saying, Denise, is that I have a lot on my plate. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I have friends who live down there who have homes in that area, and, you know, we've been talking and texting back and forth and, you know, sending love and prayers. But at the same time, you know, how do you manage your body so that you don't become ill, so that it doesn't carry on into the week? So the big piece, there's a couple of things that we cannot be, and I'm just going to preface, say this, and then I'm going to tell you a couple of things that you can do. So we can't be blind to the fact that we can be injured, hurt, or have things like Hurricane Florence happen. It's an aspect of living, the human condition, and it's hard to fathom, yet it happens every day. But a part of us, deep in the deep consciousness, accepts it. Otherwise, we would stay home. Okay, but the key is that what do we do when it happens? What happens when we stub our toe? What happens when we have a fender bender? Well, my response to that is that I like to prepare to be have a certain level of groundedness and calm in my life. So if you imagine stress from 0 to 10, 10 being really high, 0 being, you know, you're laid back on the beach, enjoying yourself, very calm. Well, if you live an 8 to 9, and a lot of people do, stress level, when something happens, even if it's a simple stub of the toe, or you have a fender bender, there's no room in order for you to kind of rise to the occasion and then kind of return back to calm. So I like to do things in my life when it's basically okay, to deepen well-being, to find a deeper level of groundedness, like you say, standing outside, doing yoga, doing simple breath work, using essential oils, you know, lots of different things that we can do in small little increments throughout the day. Okay, so I'll give you a couple of suggestions, okay? So number one, this is actually from the HeartMath Institute, and I'm a HeartMath coach consult through them. So if you just, you don't have to put your hand on the heart, but you need to put your attention on the heart. You can put the hand there as a way to anchor you just for a moment. So go ahead and do that, Denise. Just put your hand on the heart.
I'm doing it. Okay. I'm following right along.
Oh, good. Okay. So what I want you to do, and your eyes can be open or closed, okay, is to inhale through your nose to the count of 5 and exhale through your nose through the count of 5, and do that 5 times. And if your mind wanders, just return to the body, return to breath.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm one of those people, everybody, and I want to meditate. I genuinely, it's on my bucket list, learn how to meditate. Now, what you just described, I do quite a bit of that. But just sitting and meditating, my brain just goes into squirrel monkey mode. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm breathing and I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing, and I will start on July 1st, if I'm trying to meditate, creating my Thanksgiving shopping list, which I know by heart, it's the same thing every year. Or I will fall over and drool because I just put myself to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that I'm really able to do.
Well,
but I did find out if I open my refrigerator door, and we all do this, it's instantly open refrigerator door syndrome. You open the refrigerator door, you stick your head in there, and you're blank. You don't have a thought in your head. So sometimes, seriously, when I'm getting really stressed, which I manage pretty well, I'm pretty proud of how I manage my stress, I will quite literally go open the double doors in my refrigerator and just stick my upper body in there, and I take a break. It's only a few minutes, a minute, well, it's until the doors start dinging, and then I come out of my trance. But believe it or not, it's helpful, and I can walk off and kind of laugh at myself and then go right back to where I need to be. So that's one of my little tricks that I employ.
Well, and that's the key, is to try different things and to see what is it that works for you. Okay, the heart-focused breathing that I just mentioned, HeartMath has been studying for 35, 40 years the power of heart intelligence, because the information in the body, 80% of the information that goes to the brain comes from the heart, okay, through the channels through, I'm pretty sure it's the vagus nerve, to the brainstem and the limbic system. So when the breath is slowed down and you breathe in for the count of five, exhale to the count of five breaths, maybe one or two more or less, it establishes greater harmony and coherence in the body. Now, if somebody, you know, like what you're describing, okay, needs to build up to five breaths, but the idea is to not engage and associate meaning to the thoughts that you have. Okay, so there's a lot of ways to find your quiet and your distance in your life from all of the hubbub that goes on out there. Another simple thing that you can do, let's imagine that your head is in the refrigerator, okay? You can add to that.
I hope people are not listening to this and thinking I'm insane, because that did just sound a little bit insane, but it worked.
Well, what can I say? Well, but that the key is we all have our ways of managing. You're talking to someone who used to stand with the freezer door open with a spoon, who ate out of the ice cream carton.
You're not alone in that. I know many people who do that. I don't eat sugar, so that's not a problem
for
me.
Yeah, I don't either anymore.
Yeah.
But back in the day.
I'm a super taster. I can't stand it. I mean, I really can't stand it.
But back in the day, that helped me, you see. But unfortunately, it was destructive. So when you're standing in the refrigerator, you can take in that experience and absorb it so that it kind of roots itself into your cells, into your energetic system. An example might be is you feel the cold, okay, or you take a big breath and you smell your refrigerator. Okay, the foods that are in there and how they have kind of
strawberries.
Washed
I always
together.
Smell
yes,
strawberries.
Exactly.
I don't know why.
Right, or you just look at the shape and the packaging and the colors. Okay, and you might even hear the sound of the refrigerator. Okay, and the position that your body's in. You see what I mean? There's ways that when you take experiences in, through the senses, that's how we learn. That's how we take in life. And so if you want to, if you ground yourself several times a day in these moments, and see, and that's what I do. I do breath work. I get up and I stretch. I do a little bit of yoga. I might use some oils. I go get some tea. These are all things that I know help me to stay connected to myself. So I
and see,
make
Sana,
a cup
I
of
do
tea.
The same thing.
Good.
Multiple times
mm-hmm.
a day, but I had not
mm-hmm.
made that, you know, kind of leap to well-being. I do it for focus because, I mean, I'm often asked, my God, how do you get so much work done during the day? I focus. I learned to stop multitasking. I was an excellent, I thought,
mm-hmm.
multitasker. And I started to realize the damage that was doing to me just in, you know, terms of brain fog and irritability and well-being,
mm-hmm.
I guess. So because I am in front of multiple monitors, I'm working on websites or online business management, I'm very, very techie. Because I'm constantly in my office and I am a high-functioning workaholic, I freely admit that, I will get up. I'm like a jack-in-the-box, honestly. I will get up out of my chair, leave my office every 15 to 30 or 45 minutes. I mean, seriously, I am up and moving. I may get on my rebound or I may go outside. I may go stick my... God, here I go, my head in the refrigerator. I may waltz with my cat. I'm going to
mm-hmm.
be doing any number of things that allow me to take deep breaths, to refocus. And when I come back in here, I've got new ideas. My
mm-hmm.
my eyes feel better. My eyes are refocused. My head is refocused. And I do it for that reason. But listening to you, I'm realizing that it's also putting me on the path to well-being. So I'm very excited. I didn't know I was that smart.
Well, isn't what you're describing is well-being?
I did not look at it that way. I looked at it as purely focus.
Well, isn't that a part of well-being, to be present and to be focused
yeah.
on the task at hand?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I do in my work. I know exactly what I need to do, what to eat, how I need to prepare myself so that I can be as fully present with a client as possible. Okay, and I do specific things to kind of put some parameters around my behaviors. If I were to, and I don't eat, cake stuff, but if I were to eat
yeah.
cake, I would be asleep. in a coma in the chair. So I know exactly what I need to do so that I can sit there and be as balanced and have harmony within myself. And I also tell you, there have been several times where I had, you know, a couple hour break where I will actually go up and take an Epsom salts bath, get back dressed again and come back down, especially if it was, you know, particularly difficult situation. You know, so I have the pleasure of working out of my home, so I have that available
back.
To me.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so so we and I think the issue with healing that I find is that we become so focused on the problem that we don't realize, like, where's our destination? And do I have to wait until I'm completely healed to be well? Okay. So when somebody comes in and they tell me that, you know, their lives are very, very stressed, and it's like, well, if you saw a timeline here, you know, what's the percentage? Well, 90%. So when we look at well-being, how can we begin to expand that experience so that they can have these seconds or these moments that actually accumulate and create hormonal and physiologic changes in the body, in the nervous system, in the brain, as we are processing and moving through whatever it is we need to do for ourselves.
You're stacking the good rather than concentrating
right.
on the things that irritate you or bug you, or you have a headache and you don't feel good. And listen, I have learned, if I tell myself, oh, I've got a headache, and I don't get up immediately and go get some water, which I have water all over the house. It's my favorite beverage. But if I don't deal with it, all of a sudden I've got it going on in this loop in my head. I've got a headache.
Mm-hmm.
Then I annoy
mm-hmm.
myself because now I've given myself a darn headache.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's double time to get rid of it and get myself back on track by approaching different thoughts and different systems and just, you know, now I have to go deal with that stupid headache that is all my own fault because I
right.
told myself
right.
a headache. So is,
well,
am I understanding what you're saying?
Right. It's important that, and it's not so much that you gave it to yourself, is what do you do now? Okay. Things like lavender or peppermint, or you might just look back, several hours or a day and wonder, okay, what did I do or what didn't I do? Okay, that brought me here. Have I not moved around enough? Because if you're at the computer and maybe you sat through your break and all of a sudden you have a stiff neck and, you know, a little while later you have this headache, see, that teaches us. See, I'm a believer in, like, I don't know, I kind of coined this phrase in this guidebook I'm creating called 1,000 Healings, is that we have such an illusion about what healing is. I mean, if you read Facebook, everybody, we all want miracles, you know, the big changes, the big cure. But we forget that we have probably 1,000 healings, maybe even one day where you have an insight or you're able to help somebody solve a problem or somebody says something to you that is either kind and uplifting or that is very raw and penetrating, or you have this experience or an opportunity comes by that you can actually be helpful to somebody, or even an accident that happens. Because if I have a fender bender, I get to decide, there's a moment there where I get to decide, how am I going to move through this? Okay, or even when there's a tragedy in the family. That doesn't mean that there's no emotion or that there's no upset. It's like, how do I suck it up? Do I find, you know, people that I can gather around me for support so that I can rest and restore myself? A lot of us don't do that. You know, and things become held in the body that create
and
tension.
And so you said something right there that I found very interesting because I had actually written this down, suck it up. When I was a kid, there were two phrases that I heard a lot. One was suck it up, buttercup, which I hated, and the
mm-hmm.
other one was straighten up and fly right, which made me instantly want to do something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of sucking it up. You know, I think you need to stop, deal with it, and then move on.
Well, it's easier said than done. But here's what happens. See, if that becomes a way of relating or coping with stress during childhood, for example, then it's easy to repeat that when we have a parallel situation or a similar level of stress in our adult lives, because that energy will take over, and it's almost like your adult self that is experienced and wise and the, you know, problem solver becomes this observer to this part of you that feels very familiar and almost takes over in an automatic sort of way. See, that's the subconscious mind body. And I know this really well because when I was a kid, my mom died suddenly. And I thought I killed her because I had dreams and premonitions of her death. And she would come into my room because I would be crying, and I never told her. How do you tell your mother that? And so when she died suddenly, she had a brain aneurysm. I thought, oh my God, I did this. So I smiled for, well, I don't know, 12 years, never shed a tear out of shame and guilt because I figured if I did that I would be in trouble. But there was nowhere for me to go with to get, you know, for somebody to say, Sana, you don't have that power. Okay, and what if this is something else? And I've come to understand that I'm highly intuitive. And so, and it was kind of coming to fruition during that time. And so I smiled, and everybody thought that I was okay. And nobody asked either. So when there's a family tragedy, it's easy for people to assume that if you're not, you know, kind of crying, which is the typical grief response, that you're basically okay. Well, in my case, I had sucked it up big time. But what happened when I was in my later 20s, I collapsed, basically, because I couldn't hold that and an assortment of other traumas that had occurred in my teens and 20s as well, because there was nowhere to go with the enormity of what I was experiencing. And also, a lot of what we experience never gets articulated but stored in the body as a felt sense, or it's not felt until there's kind of an explosion like what happened in my life. It was almost as if I was shot out of a cannon. And, you know, I was very ill at that time in my life. So it's easy to suck it up because it was also a matter of survival. Because about two days after my mom was buried, the priests and the nuns came down, and I was eavesdropping. And they told my dad, "Don't worry, kids, don't grieve." And I thought, oh, okay.
Ouch. Okay, double
right.
Ouch.
Right. And they wanted to put all six of us in an orphanage. And my dad, God bless him, he kept us all together and did the best he could, even with his own traumas, because he had severe post-traumatic stress from World War II. So, and his mother died when he was a teenager. So, so he was being triggered by this whole experience. He kept hearing, well, no good man raises six children. You know, you need to farm these kids out. You know, they were basically saying...
Well, that's
saying,
some craptastic advice.
Yeah, it was. So I'm very grateful of his strength and his need and really in his desire to keep the family together. So I only say this because, I mean, you can see all the influences here about how important it can be and how it can be a way that we establish a way to manage and cope with adversity or even small things so that we don't appear vulnerable or to have rejection again or to not be heard again or to be seen. And there's a lot of pieces to it.
And that leads me to, and I think we're covering this, but that leads me to one of my next questions, which is, how do you identify the obstacles that are preventing you from success in business and in life? I mean, what I'm hearing is that we are kind of the sum total of our parts and our experiences and even the experiences
right.
of other people. I don't doubt that a bit. I mean, I'm a quiet observer. I was always a very quiet child. I was never
mm-hmm.
shy. Well, I was shy as a child. I'm not shy now, but I am a committed introvert. I'm so committed that I keep telling myself that the day Amazon can deliver 30 pounds of live crawfish and two heads of cabbage to my door, I might sell my car. I may never come out again. But
mm-hmm.
that just means that I am a lifelong observer of other people, of nature, of my own self. And, you know, an introvert does a lot of thinking. We have to be alone a lot, and we think, and many of us are empaths. and many of us are intuitives. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting life, but I find that we tend to look at the obstacles that can prevent us from success in business and life a little bit differently than people who are constantly on the go and not taking the time to just kind of sit and do their own research. Am I right or am I wrong? Am I way off base?
No, I would say that you're pretty on target. I mean, I do work with entrepreneurs or business folks who have, it's typically that they're stuck or there's a money consciousness issue. And one of the first things that I start looking for is who's in your wallet? Okay, is it dad?
Okay, explain that.
Is it grandfather? Okay. Okay, and basically, see, money has an energy, right? It comes in, it goes out, and in between we hold on to it. And we also have a consciousness about money. And the subconscious drives our lives and it shapes us. So if there are messages within the subconscious about a lack or not deserving or that you're never going to make it or that, you don't deserve success, or if something happened to dad. I've had women in particular, about 80% of my clients are women, who, they notice this repeat pattern where they are offered a promotion and then they quit their job suddenly and decide to find something else. So this promotion becomes like a ceiling. Okay, so when we step back and look at that, I said, I ask a question, and it may be relevant. It depends on what somebody's telling me, is who else did not achieve their potential? And then they look at me kind of startled, like, well, dad. Well, what happened to dad? Well, dad got sick when I was 11, okay, and he had to stop working. So we plunged into poverty or, lost the significant income. Mom had to go to work. Do you see what I mean? And then, mom may have, kind of planted seeds of, well, you don't want to upset your father. Okay? It's really interesting, and that's where I look at the language. Okay, how were you conditioned? Okay, what what does it cost you? It can be self-esteem. It can be success. It can be earnings. It can be, finding your passion even, okay? Because the language, it's all in the language. Like somebody, might say, I have no money. Well, that's a complete lack to have no money. But when you step back and say, well, where do you have investments? Do you have, how much is in your wallet? I mean, how much is here? How much is there? Well, yes, I have money. And I remember this really clearly because when I was single, there was a time when, and I actually have it on my wall in my office, I had 7 cents for 2 weeks. And I ate everything, every pickle, everything in my refrigerator and my cupboard because I didn't have any money. But I took that 7 cents and I taped it to cardboard and I kept looking at it and I kept saying, I have money. I have 7 cents and this is what I do in my life now. I reframed it. And within a couple of weeks, I was offered a job to teach at a local college. Okay, so I had the choice at that point in terms of how I was going to manage myself and the language. What is the narrative that I was going to tell myself about this situation? Because I have a narrative that's going on in my brain. Okay, I have what I speak to people, what I tell, and also what does the culture say? What does my family say? Okay. And what about this specific event? Well, you know, somebody might have said, well, see, Sana, I told you you weren't going to make it. Okay. And I get to decide how I use that experience and the language that I associate with it and what I tell myself that determines whether I'm in sync and flow and have harmony in my life or I create tension. So I
you
always
would create
listen
tension
while describe
by
your
agreeing pain. With them, right? I mean,
right?
Look,
yeah, exactly.
I'm bloody-minded. Anybody who knows me will tell you that I'm just a pig-headed fool. I argue with my onboard nav system. She says go left, and I tell her you're not the boss of me, and I go wherever I want. I don't know why I bother. But if somebody were to say that to me, well, you're never going to make anything of yourself, and it has been said to me, I instantly poke her up and go, yeah, watch this. But that's just my go-to response. But you're saying that some people don't have that response, and they're like, okay, I agree with you. Whether they know it or not, that's their response.
Well, I mean, people can have millions and have a poverty consciousness, so it's not about the amount of money that we have. Okay,
think about
the flow that comes in.
Yeah.
How do you hold it? What do you do with it? And then how do you release it back? Okay, we inherit our eyes and hair color from our families, but we also inherit these patterns. Like, how did your parents manage money? Was there an event that created, you know, difficulty and stress financially? Okay, how did they manage it? What did they say to you about it? Okay, and, you know, keep in mind that we do a lot, we will do anything to stay bonded with the family. Okay, but when you see how these old patterns and these conditionings don't work and you kind of nudge them up the consciousness, and then that gives you the power to make a decision about what's important to me now. You know, am I willing to risk, you know, something, my identification, the old relationship with mom or dad, in order for me to live how I want to live? And even if you don't know what that is, there's lots of ways to learn and to begin inquiring and getting curious about your life. So how do I want to manage money? You know, what's enough for me?
Okay.
Wait. You know,
I'm sorry. We're running. We've only got a couple of minutes, and we have not gotten to another question I wanted to ask you, which is about effective strategies for managing how you handle money, how you handle stress. Do you have any kind of last-minute tips and advice that you can offer? Money. Let's talk about the last topic we were talking about, but also how you manage your stress. And let's face it, money is a huge stressor, whether you've got too much of it or not enough of it, or you don't know, you know, where your next meal is coming from.
Right.
So if you could give us just a couple of key pointers, that would be wonderful.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, you want to tune in to what it is that you're doing. You know, listen to yourself, talk about your work. Is what you want congruent with your narrative and also your mind talk? Okay, and what do you believe about yourself as a business owner? What do you really want? Until we can kind of sit down and have this conversation with ourselves and also look at what's underneath the issues. You know, is this a pattern in your life? Is it familiar to you? Okay, does it go back to, you know, how is there a familiarity to you in terms of how you, you know, like patterns or communications or messages in the family? So the first thing, too, is you can change your language because the words will reveal the pattern. So if you say, I really need more customers, the subconscious is going to hear, I have no customers. So how do you nourish and kind of put your attention and create energy and increase your vibration regard
in
to
that instance,
the customers
I would say
that you
I
have?
Am, yeah. In that instance, honestly, I would say to myself, and I do this, I would say, look, I wouldn't even acknowledge that I don't have enough clients or customers or widget sales or whatever it is. I would just say, I am so looking forward to meeting my new clients tomorrow and just
exactly.
make it happen.
I mean, if you have two clients, love them. Get good at servicing them by being present and focused with them. You know, because if you're distracted, then you're not present.
No, and
okay.
they know
so,
it. You know, people pick up on what you're
yeah,
not saying
absolutely.
More often than you think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
excellent.
I would do also the heart-focused breathing because I'm a firm believer in not leaving yourself up to chance. Okay, like I said, like we talked earlier, there's certain things that I do so that when clients come or when I'm writing up recommendations or I'm getting ready to call, I increase my energy, my clarity, my presence so that they get me because they're paying for me. I owe that to them. So not leaving myself up to chance. You know, how one of the things that I do kind of quietly is that when I go to bed at night, I always look at what was good in my day. What was like a blessing that I either received or that I gave to somebody. Okay? And I ask my and I allow it to run itself in my mind like a little movie. Okay, because again, images, movies, our language becomes a part of our cellular like flow. So then I ask myself, well, why is that important to me? You know, what is the meaning that I associate with that? Because what might be a blessing to me may not be for you. See, and I take that to sleep. Okay, so again, it's all about how are you managing yourself? What are you doing with body tension? Yoga has been researched to be better than Prozac. Okay, doing things like Tai Chi.
I have read that.
Walking.
Right.
I know, it's fascinating. And as a yoga teacher, I see the difference in my students and also in myself. So, you know, this whole other experience of also taking in the good stuff and allowing it to absorb, you know, by pausing for a moment and just feeling the hot cup of coffee, that all of these little calming places kind of opens up the channels within us. Okay,
gratitude is one of the best things for you. Simple gratitude, complex gratitude.
There's
I do
so
the same.
Much physiology.
I turn. There is. I mean, when I wake up in the morning, and I used to jump out of bed, and like my mom would say, the devil would say, oh, my God, she's awake. I would hit the floor running and never look back. My mom's mean, but, you know, she's right, but still. Now, before I jump out of bed, I will deliberately stay in bed, and I will raise my hands to the heavens, if you will, the ceiling fan, whatever I'm looking at, and I will just immediately say, thank you. And I start my day in tremendous gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
On the days, the very rare days that I miss that little, I don't even know, I don't know that it's a habit or the act of mindfulness, if you will, things can go sideways fairly quickly until I go, oh, okay, slow it down, girl, slow it down.
Mm-hmm. And what do I need to learn here?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I do, like every morning, when the alarm goes off, I snooze once, and I start taking 10 breaths, and I do this count up, and at 10, I'm up and ready to go. And so finding these little ways to ground ourselves, to stay centered. See, because keep in mind, you know, when we're stressed, our vision is tunneled, and we're not as open. So when you can create these pauses, these moments, these 1,000 healings through your day, then you'll be surprised at what you can experience, because if we're stressed, we're also missing out on opportunities because we don't see it. And we may just dismiss it.
I love that, 1,000 healings. That's, I just wrote that down. That's brilliant. Okay, so we are out of time. I didn't realize that we had so much to chat about. It's always good to do that, though. So we're about 5 minutes over. We're still recording. We're not streaming. So we lost the audience in the chat room, but they'll be able to hear this later on demand. So where can people find you on the web before I let you go?
I have a couple of ways that people can contact me. I'm on Facebook. Your Quest for Self-Healing is my business Facebook page, or you can Google Sana Karapalati. And also my website, which is either my name, Sana Karapalati, or lifechangingenergytherapies.com. Or they can just call me, 412-344-2272.
Oh, that's nice. You're brave. I don't give out my phone number. I have a toll-free number. I would never get any sleep. I'm surprised. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It has been a pleasure speaking with you today. Yeah, I think so, too. And I thank you for all the wonderful tips and the advice that you've shared with our audience. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. And also contact us, both of us, and let us know how we did. If you have any questions or, you know, just kind of insight that you'd like to offer, we would both love to hear it. Sana, thank you.
Thank you, Denise. Have a good day.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.